This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, ever since the news broke that Detroit had filed for bankruptcy, there has been a tidal wave of stories about the Motor City that's been sent to all corners of the world. Fiscal disaster, a city in ruin, streetlights don't work, police response times of nearly an hour, broken fire rigs, and no money for repairs, abandoned buildings, and the list goes on. But my next guest believes this historic bankruptcy provides not only new challenges, but new opportunities. Opportunities to hit the reset button and build a city core that can be vibrant and strong, and hopefully strong enough to lift up other regions of the city. Bruce Katz is a vice president at the Brookings Institution, and he's a founding director of the Brookings Metropolitan Policy Program. Along with Jennifer Bradley, he's co-author of the new book, The Metropolitan Revolution, How Cities and Metros Are Fixing Our Broken Politics and Fragile Economy. Bruce Katz joins us now from Washington. Welcome to Stateside, Bruce.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, you write that as daunting as it's going to be to get Detroit's fiscal house in order, and I think everybody agrees it's a huge task, that alone is not going to renew Detroit. What needs to follow the financial house cleaning?
Yeah, I don't think it's sufficient, whether it's for a city or a metropolitan area or a state or even the federal government, just to focus on getting the fiscal house in order. We need a growth strategy in the United States post-recession. We still have to create more jobs. We still have to create better jobs. That ultimately provides a platform for a stable and resilient and prosperous economy. It ultimately creates jobs for residents and constituents. So the thing about Detroit is for a long time we've allowed the negative to crowd out the positive. There are some good things, assets, advantages, attributes of Detroit that already businesses like Quicken Loans or philanthropies like Kresge and Hudson Weber and others, really wonderful intermediaries like Midtown Detroit or Invest Detroit or Detroit Economic Growth Corporation, they are already building on. So let's understand that there are some serious challenges facing the city, I mean, because of the population growth, because of dispersion of jobs throughout the metro. But when you look at that decor, about 5 square miles, 7 square miles in a city of 138 square miles, there are unbelievable assets, anchor institutions, good bones, historic buildings, riverfront across, you know, with Canada sitting to the south. Let's not forget why this was a great city, and let's now begin to reimagine, not just reimagine, actually work towards its revival and comeback.
So what I think I hear is there is certainly the challenge of the books, the fiscal situation Detroit's in, but there's an overall area, there's an overall feel for what Detroit can offer that it, you're saying it's already growing.
Well, we've seen enormous market momentum in the last 7 to 10 years in employment growth in the downtown, in business and other residential growth in the downtown and the midtown. Obviously, the M1 rail coming into the Woodward Corridor, mostly local financed, right? And let me tell you why I feel it's important to focus on these advantages, because in most cities in the United States, the cores are about 3 or 5% of the land mass, but 40 to 50% of the employment. Right? That's how we've organized our economy in the United States, and that's what it looks like in Detroit. So a very small portion of the city is powering the job growth and the fiscal growth that is needed at a time when the market is revaluing cities and revaluing downtowns and revaluing midtowns, where you have these anchor institutions like Wayne State and Henry Ford Health Systems and the College for Creative Studies. So if this was 20 years ago and we were still building science parks at the periphery of our metropolitan areas, right, I might have a different view of this. But we're talking about the revival of a city at the exact time that cities are seeing a renaissance in our country because of market shifts and demographic preferences. We should build on that.
Demographic preferences, meaning, in fact, I just saw the big story this morning, people, not just young people, but and hipsters, if you will, but baby boomers who want that urban experience moving back downtown. With that said, here's the question. How do you prevent the development of two Detroits. So one is thriving. It has tech startups. It has medical. It has education. It has young, energetic people. And then there's the largely decaying residential area. How do you prevent that development of the two Detroits?
Well, I think you've got to be very deliberate and purposeful about it, right? I mean, so as jobs grow, if we are able to set up these feeder systems out of our high schools and perhaps out of the community colleges, but frankly, I think we need to start in our high schools. Remember SHOP, right?
Yes.
Remember our focus on trades? Remember Votech? We stopped all that in the United States because somehow we were envisioning becoming a post-industrial economy where we would just consume the goods produced by someone else. I think actually, whether it's technological jobs in the healthcare system or whether it's small batch manufacturing or even frankly many of the jobs in the broader services sector, we can reorient a portion of our high schools in cities like Detroit to have this constant feeder system of trained, qualified workers getting into good jobs, better jobs. But it means we have to rethink education, not just at the system level. I'm talking really at the school level, at the curriculum level, so that we can basically service what I think could be economic growth. And then in other parts of the city, as fiscal revenues begin to grow, we can begin to grow businesses and jobs for residents. I was in Philadelphia yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I spent several hours with in a major grocery store in the middle of what's called a food desert, right? Mm-hmm. Parts of inner cities, I'm sure many people in Detroit recognize what these look like, where you really don't have access to quality food, to food that's grown in the environs, right, local environs. Well, in Philadelphia, they've brought four of these major grocery stores into the inner city within the past 5 years, thousands of jobs, quality food, competitive prices. This is doable, right? So we don't have to wait for the perfect. We need to get about the business of leveraging off the assets we have, whether it's in Detroit or somewhere else, and taking the innovations of other cities, American cities, in similar situations and applying this to them to this great city.
Let's talk about the actual bankruptcy filing. And what impact, Bruce, do you see that bankruptcy having on the momentum that you have talked about, the tech-oriented startups by entrepreneurs and the medical systems with their renovations and expansions and Dan Gilbert and everything he's doing? Do you see the bankruptcy having any kind of a dampening effect on this?
Well, it'll have an effect if we let it have an effect, frankly, because, you know, much of this corporate and civic momentum and the real momentum of on the ground was happening in spite of the government, right? I mean, so, you know, I mean, this is the power of cities, is that you have – it's not just about government. It's about business and civic and university networks making smart and strategic decisions and then making sure you connect – other parts of the city and other residents in the city to this growth, right? So I think we should not confuse the fiscal health of cities with their economic potential. And we shouldn't confuse cities with just the health of their government with the health of their broader networks of corporate and civic and university leaders and institutions. So look, this is going to be a long period here. And I think anyone who comes on your show and says, I know exactly how this is going to play out, is not really telling the truth, right? Because we don't know how this is going to play out. But while it is playing out in the courts and, you know, with the legal wrangling, we should maintain this momentum by sending a signal to the region, to our country, and to the world. There are investable propositions in the city of Detroit that can grow jobs now, connect people to the economic mainstream. Let's get about the business of doing this while the city gets its fiscal house in order.
If you've just joined me, I'm speaking with Bruce Katz, who's a vice president at the Brookings Institution, and along with Jennifer Bradley, he's co-author of the new book, The Metropolitan Revolution, How Cities and Metros Are Fixing Our Broken Politics and Our Fragile Economy. And speaking of broken politics, and you alluded to it a few moments ago, Bruce, what role do you think the federal government should be playing in all of this, from the bankruptcy to the post-bankruptcy recovery?
Well, look, everyone who listens to your show knows that for all intents and purposes, the federal government has left the building. Okay, I mean, they are mired in partisan rancor. They can barely even do basic business anymore. I do not expect them to be Superman. I would like them to be Clark Kent, right? Stable, reliable, somewhat strategic. I think for the federal government, first and foremost, they should recognize they already do invest in the city of Detroit, major investments in the city of Detroit through advanced R&D, through infrastructure, through housing, small business loans, export finance, housing loans and grants. Be a better partner.
Be a better
partner. Your resources more flexible. Make your resources less prescriptive in the service of local vision and priorities. So I don't expect them to come in swooping in. Because we do treat natural disasters, frankly, think of Hurricane Sandy,
right,
very, very differently than we treat these kind of, you know, long in the making disasters, right?
Social and economic.
But I do expect them, and I think we should hold them up to the challenge of being a reliable partner. And that can be done to a large extent through the administrative, the executive branch, not requiring additional legislation.
Bruce, in your book, you write that metro areas, and we're talking not just Detroit but across the country, you talk about metro areas are powerful when the city can work with the suburbs. So let's look here in Southeast Michigan. There's a fairly long history of distrust. It runs along both sides of 8 Mile Road. What do you see as the key to overcoming that distrust so you could see that sense of the city and the suburbs working together?
Well, in our book, we do tell the story of places like Detroit or places like Chicago where the cities and the suburbs were literally at each other's throats for long periods of time, all right? And we know what the divisions are. They might be race. They might be class. They might be cultural. But in those other metropolitan areas, they realized we're in a global economy, fiercely competitive. We are better off if we collaborate to compete across jurisdictional lines, send one unified signal to investors and companies and workers that this is a place that is going to act with cohesion, right, in a unified way. That was not the history in Detroit for a long time, but I take solace from the fact that the suburban voters voted for additional resources for the Detroit Institute of Arts. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You now have a regional transportation authority because of the investment in M1 rail. I think there are signs of metropolitan collaboration that could continue and persist, particularly if the city is able to get back on its feet post bankruptcy. And there's an understanding in the region of how critical this city is to their own prosperity. Imagine the signal sent to the world of a Detroit rising to Oakland and Macomb and Wayne. Imagine that. This would be page one story everywhere because all anyone has heard for 25 years is Detroit falling. So, you know, I would just say for people who, you know, have children who are thinking about whether they want to stay in Detroit and want to move to Chicago, right,
mm-hmm,
or move to Pittsburgh or move to places that have a lively downtown, have really seen many of their urban neighborhoods come back and their older suburban communities come back, it really is in everyone's interest to get behind the revival of this great city.
Bruce Katz is a vice president at the Brookings Institute, and along with his co-author Jennifer Bradley, the book is The Metropolitan Revolution, How Cities and Metros Are Fixing Our Broken Politics and Fragile Economy. Bruce Katz joined us from Washington. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Hey, thank you for having me.